WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at FairToFlare.com. I am Jason Mann, and my guest once again is Joe Drilling. Joe, how you doing?
I'm fantastic. It was much less time this time in between my appearances on the show.
Yes, and we are finishing up the Starrcade main event series, Starrcade 2000, with, I would call them, two kings of unintentional wrestling comedy.
That's a great way to describe these gentlemen. I would call them, scissor stabber and steroid freak, but
I feel like both these men are capable of taking large amounts of performance enhancing drugs or other drugs for that matter.
Yes.
Or capable of, hitting you with any possible weapon at any time. I feel like they both have kind of short trigger tempers, at least, whether in real life or wrestling character or mix of both, whatever you
both
want to put it. Yeah.
In many of their cases.
Sure. I believe Scott Steiner got in trouble for maybe choking a construction worker or something along those lines at one point, something like that, So, and of course, Sid may have gotten stabby in 1993,
Have happened.
Yes, we are talking about a Big Papa Pump, Scott Steiner, the WCW champion.
Holler if you hear me.
Yeah, I certainly will. I believe, although I will actually holler. I will not holler because, I'm going to try to keep it real. And against Sid Vicious.
Oh, the master and ruler of the world. Yes. When I did a podcast for OnTheStick.com, which is where I do most of my podcasting. And I convinced some of the folks who frequent that site to join me in a wrestling podcast. So we did this ridiculous 3-hour podcast about the history of WrestleMania last year. And one of the funniest moments, we were podcasting way too long, way too late. And we just started cracking up and we were talking about, my friend Eric had just watched WrestleMania 8 when Sid Vicious tells Hulk Hogan that Sid is the master and Hogan is the learner. And he says it like 3 times. He's like, "You are the learner, Hogan." The learner?
Yes.
And that is just Sid in a nutshell. Like in my brain, it's always like, "You are the learner." He's so, like, how did this man have such a long and successful career in professional wrestling? Like,
well, I mean, I don't know if I'd call it successful.
Successful in terms of he made a shitload of money.
Yes.
That he probably didn't deserve.
And he main evented 2 WrestleManias and a Starrcade, and was a pretty big star for 10 years.
Yeah,
so
how did that happen? He's terrible. He's terrible at everything. He's he cuts a terrible promo. He wrestles a terrible match. He mechanically, he's all, his punches are the worst. If you watch that,
they are.
I'm trying to remember what. There's an event, I think it's a WrestleMania, maybe WrestleMania 7, where he chases somebody off, and his punches are just the worst thing I've ever seen.
I believe you are talking about Mind Games 96, after the Shawn Michaels Mankind match.
Yes,
Vader.
That is exactly what I'm talking about. Thank you. That is exactly what I'm talking about. His punches are just like, he hesitates, but he lifts his arm like he's doing half of the YMCA. And then, and then he brings it down where like the inside of his wrist kind of cuffs Vader on the ear.
Yeah. He's sort of, I've heard described as, he looks like he's like a cat who's trying to paw at Vader. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Also a perfectly, a declawed cat.
Yes,
bat at something. That is a perfectly valid description.
Yes.
Of of Sid's punching ability. And this match, I almost got hopeful because yesterday we were on Twitter, you and I, like we do, and you were talking about the last match we talked about, which was the 96 Starrcade a few days ago or a few few episodes ago. And then, you know, we talked about you were like, and you know, and you said this match surprisingly wasn't as terrible as I, or something to that effect. Like, it wasn't as terrible as I remembered.
Right.
I gotta say, this match was every bit as terrible as I remembered.
Okay. Well, this is the first time I'd seen this match, so.
Okay. It's brief, though, at least. So I guess.
Yeah.
There's that.
It's energetic, at least. I think part of it is because I think it's sort of a so bad it's good in a sense, because I think the commentary is really interesting here. It is about as over the top as it gets. The commentators are Tony Schiavone, Mark Madden, and Scott Hudson. And Mark Madden was pretty much over the top and crazy almost all of the time. I mean, that was pretty much the only mode that he had. Mm-hmm. But Tony is
still the case, if I'm not. I mean, I guess he doesn't do commentary anymore, but he's certainly over the top.
Yeah, I think he's a radio personality, and he's, you know, occasionally has forays into writing columns and stuff. But anyway, but it's like you could tell when Tony was kind of being fake. I mean, he did a lot. You commented on that last podcast, you know, Tony. But here, like, for whatever reason, he's doing a better job. Like, he's almost being he's almost so fake it's real, to borrow a phrase, you know.
Yeah.
We can get into some instances of it as we talk about through the match, but yeah. I the one that strikes me is at the beginning of the video before the introductions is Tony Schiavone says, "We've had memories to last a lifetime already."
That's accurate. I'm looking over the card of this particular.
I was just about to look at it too. I forgot to put it up, but I have it up now. So,
but let me, before we get to the card, can I just step back 1 second? I just want to go down the title, run down the title history of the previous year.
Yeah.
Because the WCW title had essentially been pissed upon by anybody who had the power to do so, to the point where it basically didn't mean anything.
Yep.
And I really want to drive home to the listeners, like, exactly what that means. So, like, if we start immediately post Starrcade of 99,
right,
and go from there, December 20th of 1999, Bret Hart is the champion. He vacates it,
right,
because he didn't like the way a match with Goldberg ended the night before at Starrcade.
It's because Roddy Piper called. It was sort of like a reprise of the Montreal Screwjob, where Piper screws over Bret instead of instead of Earl Hebner.
Exactly. So, first of all, can I suggest a moratorium on ever referencing the Montreal Screwjob again? In not in terms of what we're doing as in talking about it, but in terms of like ever echoing it in an angle again. Can we just be done? Like, can that be over now?
I think now that Bret and Vince are on, I think now that Bret's come back, I think it's probably done. I mean, it certainly could happen again. I mean, TNA could, you know, who knows?
I was going to say, TNA, it's only a matter of time before TNA does something that echoes the Montreal Screwjob. So, okay, right. So that was what happened. So, yeah, so Piper did the Montreal Screwjob thing. So Hart vacates the title on December 20th. Then later the same night, he beats Goldberg to win back the title he had just vacated 2 hours earlier.
Right. Yeah. No. It was Nitro. Yeah. Well. Yeah. It was. Yeah. You're right. He vacates it at the beginning of Nitro, and then they do a swerve, and then that's when the new NWO, the Bret Hart, Jeff Jarrett, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and I think Scott Steiner joins it like the next week.
Right. Right. So okay. So then that he holds on to it for about a month, and then it's vacated again. This time he's injured, so I guess not entirely his fault. So he vacates the title due to injury at the sold-out pay-per-view.
Yeah, he basically had to retire because of Goldberg kick him in the head. But
yeah, right, right. Benoit wins the title over Sid Vicious and then gets in an argument with Kevin Nash and forfeits the title and quits the next night on Nitro.
Kevin Sullivan, but yes.
Or yes, I'm sorry. But then, and so then there's no champion for a week. Then Sid beats Nash for it after some convoluted thing with the Harris brothers. He wins it, and then the next day on Thunder, it's vacated by Kevin Nash.
Yes.
Because he pinned the wrong Harris twin or something. So then that same... Okay, so wait. So we've got January 24th, Sid wins it by beating Nash after beating the Harris twins. The 25th, Nash vacates it. Then Nash wins it, or doesn't win it, but he gives it to himself, basically.
Right.
And then Sid Vicious wins it back from Kevin Nash again on the... There's three title changes in one day.
Yes.
Three in one day.
Basically, yes.
And then, okay, so then that actually isn't that bad for a couple months. Sid keeps the title until April. Then it's vacated. Like, somebody had just a giant, massive, you know, erection for vacating the title. Like,
right.
And then, like, that was the cool thing to do, I guess. So he vacates it on April 10th, and they go another week without a champion.
Yeah, let me stop you for 1 second. Let me get a little context here for people who don't know anything about this. Is the April 10th, when he is stripped of the title, every champion WCW stripped of their titles.
That's when
Vince Russo and Eric Bischoff took over creative control of WCW together. Basically, what it had been is Russo came in fall of 99 for 3 months, building up basically to the Starrcade, what happened at Starrcade the night after, and then about sort of getting into sometime between that and the sold out that we talked about when Benoit wins the title. He was relieved of duties, and then kind of the Kevin Sullivan regime comes in. And the reason why Benoit doesn't want to work in WCW anymore is basically because he doesn't want Kevin Sullivan in charge, because they had a personal history over, you know, Benoit's wife. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, so then the Sullivan regime lasts for a few months, and then they decide to bring back Bischoff and Russo back, and that their first show was the one where everybody vacates their titles. So continue.
So again, everybody vacates their titles.
Right.
Known as the great vacatening. And, yes. You know, and then they go another week without a champion.
Yeah.
Then at Spring Stampede, Jeff Jarrett beats DDP.
Right.
Then a week and a half after that, DDP beats Jeff Jarrett. Then a day after that, David Arquette beats Eric Bischoff on Thunder.
Yes.
And wins the title.
Yes.
Then David Arquette has the longest title reign of, like, the last several, when he keeps the belt for 2 whole weeks before he loses it to Jeff Jarrett, who keeps it for a week before losing it to Ric Flair.
By the way, David Arquette turned heel to actually help. It was a way to help Jarrett win the title.
The infamous David Arquette heel turn.
Yes.
Which allegedly David Arquette argued against that whole thing with him winning all of that. He was totally against that.
Yeah.
He didn't want anything to do with that.
Yeah.
And,
he probably enjoyed being part of it, but he thought okay, this is really dumb. Why are you guys doing this kind of
right,
thing?
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay. I'm sorry. Jeff Jarrett wins it. A week later, Ric Flair beats him. A week later, Ric Flair vacates it. Or no, I'm sorry. Vince Russo strips him of it and then gives it back to Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah, I think Flair had some sort of actual there's some sort of health scare, which is why they stripped him of that. But some legitimate
that wasn't
one.
Fake heart attack.
No, thing. No. This was later. This was an actual he had some sort of, I don't remember what it was, and it ended up not being a big deal. But
really, you can tell because the next day, Kevin Nash wins it from Jeff Jarrett, and then a week after that, Kevin Nash gives it back to Ric Flair.
Yes, yes.
Who then proceeds to lose it the same night back to Jeff Jarrett.
Yes.
At that point, they go, Jeff Jarrett actually holds on to the title for a month and a half before losing it to Booker T, which is when Hogan, that was the Hogan Jarrett lays down because they're frustrated and everybody starts airing their dirty laundry and shooting on each other on live television.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how the viewership didn't completely abandon ship at that point, because if I had still been watching actively instead of just reading about most of this, I definitely would have stopped watching at that point. Like, this was on a pay-per-view, and there literally was, bickering about match finishes happening in the show.
Yeah.
And nobody knew what was going on. Vince Russo comes down and cuts this promo that I don't understand Vince Russo's brain. he just like he cuts this like ridiculous, it's not even a promo, like he just comes out and talks a bunch of shit about Hulk Hogan, like in the ring on the microphone as part of the show. But everything what he's saying has nothing to do with the show. It has to do with like the actual backstage business.
Yeah.
None of the audience knows what's going on, and that's a total train wreck. So then Booker T ends up basically winning the title.
Yeah, at the end of the show, yeah.
At the end of the show. Yeah. Then he actually holds on to it for a couple months. Kevin Nash wins it from him on Nitro. He holds on to it for a couple weeks. Booker T wins it back. A week later, Vince Russo wins it in a steel cage match.
Well, he wins it, I think, because he ends up getting speared out of the cage by Goldberg, who not involved in the match. So Russo escapes the cage first. So it was presented as a silly, fluky, dumb thing, but as opposed to him winning it like by his merits. But yes,
it was still dumb. Like that's
it was dumb.
Clever. That was clever when Big Show threw Austin out of the cage at St. Valentine's Day Massacre 99.
Sure.
Not clever when Vince Russo wins the world title as a result. And I'll say the same thing about Vince McMahon. That whole thing where Vince McMahon won the title, like in around the same time, actually.
It was a year before, but yes.
Also not a good idea.
Right.
So then Russo then vacates the title, predictably, a week later, that same night.
Well, I believe he actually was somewhat seriously, he had a concussion and actually basically left WCW at that point.
And not a moment too soon,
right?
I might add. So he vacates it. Booker T wins it that same night. Then Booker T actually holds onto it for 2 months before Scott Steiner wins it right here in my hometown of Milwaukee in a straight jacket steel cage match at the Mayhem paper. I don't even know what that means. In the Mayhem, the Mayhem pay-per-view.
Sure.
And then, and that's where we're at. But if you look at that, I mean, that's literally like, I didn't even count, but that's how many title changes is that in the span of a year? That's ridiculous. And half of them were so-and-so vacated the title for XYZ.
Right.
And that's the thing. Like, even in the cases where it's like someone has a concussion, someone's blah, 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 something, someone, whatever. Like, there's always a way around that. It's not the finger poke of doom, but you can at least, like, have some sort of screw job where somebody has a match, but then they get hit with a chair right away, or they get hit with something or something, you know what I mean? Or like a manager grabs the feet, at least like make it a match rather than just be like, I vacated again for the 15th time this year. Like
it's
vacant for, and then like there were times when they would leave it vacant for a week and there's like, who's the champion? There isn't one, which is fine to do once in a very great while.
Sure.
To be like, there's no champion. What could happen? Like, it's interesting once in a while.
Right.
Like, the third time in a calendar year when you're like, there's no champion. Like, it's not interesting anymore. Now you just start wondering who's booking this. Like, who is the mind behind this that is trying to sell me on this being engaging programming? Because it wasn't. And so at this point, like, the title is essentially meaningless. Like, going into this pay-per-view.
Yeah, I think more than essentially. It was pretty much just kind of the most ridiculous thing ever. Yeah. Two things. One, Sid basically was gone from the point in which he vacated the title until right before the show. Like, he was hurt most of the time, and clearly he had not been working out that well during this time, because he's a little pudgy here.
He is. He's a little
porky. Yeah. I mean, you know, not like fat, but he's definitely like probably 25 pounds above his normal weight. No, I would say
he doesn't look like super porky.
Right. No. No.
Famous Mexican luchador Super Porky.
Yes.
He doesn't look like that, but he's looking a little, he's not defined. Let's put it that way.
He's got a massive mullet too. And
he has
long tights.
He does, which is weird.
Yeah.
That was weird to me that he had, because he wrestled in jean shorts after that, because the infamous leg break clip that everybody's seen a million times on YouTube, he's wearing jean shorts. And I think even like when he had that really brief like sabbatical to ECW in like 97?
Yeah, 98, I think.
Was it 98? I think.
Yeah.
He was wearing shorts, like jean shorts there.
Okay.
And then back, you know, back in the day, he just wore, you know, the standard wrestling trunk, tidy whitey style trunks.
Sure.
It was usually weird, black. Weird
sometimes
to see him.
Blue, but yeah.
Yeah, right. It was weird to see him in long, like full length tights.
He looked like if the shot was out enough, he looked like DDP.
Yeah. Except when you see him do anything, you can tell he's not as talented as DDP.
Well, right, exactly. So,
that mullet is just rocking. Like, I'm like, who still had a mullet in 2000?
I know. Yeah, it's
even pretty... Marty Jannetty cut off his mullet. Like,
right. Yeah, he might have been the last, other than maybe Mike Awesome. I think he was the last to keep the mullet. So,
but even Mike Awesome's stint as the fat chick thriller and that 70s guy, which just makes me want to punch myself in the face. Like, he had just long, like, he didn't have the full on mullet, I feel like, at that point. He just had kind of like long, like sort of Ric Flair style 70s hair for a little while there.
Sure.
So at this exact moment, maybe Mike Awesome didn't even have a mullet. I don't know. I'm not sure.
I forget exactly the point which he cut it off. If it wasn't now, it was soon after, because it was gone by the time he was in WWE.
Right. He realized, oh man, me and Sid are the only ones with mullets. I gotta do something.
This is unfortunate. Yeah. Anyway, back to Tony's We've Had Memories Last Lifetime already.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes. Okay. So now that we've gotten through the title history, let's get to the beginning of this paper. This is going to be a 3-hour-long podcast after talking about title histories. Now we're going to talk about the whole event.
Right. I've not really seen any of the matches except for the first one, which is 3 count against the Young Dragons and Jamie Noble and Evan Courageous in a 3-way ladder match.
It's a fantastic match.
Well,
okay. Fantastic. Okay. Let me reel that in. It's not fantastic. It's spotty as hell, but it's good for what it is. And at the time, it was probably the best thing WCW had going for it.
Yes, it has not aged well. I think in WCW we're grading on a curve as well. So, mm-hmm.
I thought that was implied.
right. So there's that, which is fine. There's nothing it's for the time and given all that, it's a pretty great match. So we'll go with that. We have Lance Storm against the Cat.
Could have been
okay. Yeah, I mean, that could have been kind of fun a little bit.
I love Lance Storm. I don't have a ton of love for I like the Cat, but I don't like necessarily like the ways in which I like the Cat don't involve him being in the wrestling ring, more of him being near the wrestling ring.
I agree with that. Yes. So then we have Terry Funk and Crowbar in a hardcore match.
For the WCW hardcore title. What a title, a title with such lineage, such prestige as the WCW hardcore title.
Yes.
I can't even imagine. Because I'll be honest, like Devin Storm, that's his name, right? Crowbar, Devin Storm.
Yeah.
He's never done anything for me.
He's okay, but yeah, he was never, I'm sure that match is not particularly, plus, you know, hardcore matches were so mundane and so blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, but at that point, they were pretty,
it was rote at that point. Like it was the modern day equivalent of midget wrestling. Like it was like,
right.
And we've got this weird thing. Look at the old guy bleed from the head. Like it's like a sideshow at that point. You're like, I don't even care anymore.
Yeah. And of course, you know, as has been discussed many times, it also undermined like the times in which you want to use intense violence to tell stories. So, and then we have Chronic, Brian Adams and Brian Clark taking on Big Vito and Reno to a no contest.
I don't even know who Reno is.
Can I put that out there?
I don't know who that person is.
Let's see. He was one of the Natural Born Thrillers. I think was later Luther Reigns, maybe?
Rick Cornell is an American former professional wrestler. He's best known for his stint in World Championship Wrestling under the ring name Reno, where he was a one-time hardcore champion.
Reigns Horseshoe, that's right.
Okay, yeah, he was a power plant guy, which doesn't really bode well for him.
Right, well, they were all those guys were, yeah.
Yeah, he was one of the Natural Born Thrillers. His character was that he was a shoot-fighting martial artist who fought in Las Vegas's underground fighting leagues.
Yeah.
His character storyline was an early 90s fighting video game.
Yes.
That's really pretty much it. He lost his last match in WCW to Sean Stasiak. who we all know and love, of course.
Right.
He was signed to a developmental deal by WWE and had a dark match against above average Mike Sanders, who probably should have been known as below average Mike Sanders. And he went to Heartland Wrestling and then nothing. He was let go. He's unceremoniously released from his developmental contract alongside of Kiwi, Lash LaRue, Russ McCullough, Kid Romeo, Jimmy Yang, Elix Skipper, and S.A. Rios were all released at the same time. And that's all she wrote.
Yeah, some of those guys were good, too.
Yeah, some of those guys were good. This guy, I had no idea. No. Maybe he was. I don't know.
He did the it was called the roll of the dice. It's like you're in the Scorpion Death Drop position, and then you turn and drop.
Isn't that the Crossroads? Same thing.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, it is that. And he did that. Looked really good. He did that very well. That's the first time I ever saw that move. So that's really all I remember about him. He was kind of a bigger guy.
I do know who this guy is because I did order the one single World Wrestling All-Stars pay-per-view that aired in the United States.
Oh, okay.
So I did see him have a match, I think.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. If you ever want to cover that, I will find a torrent of it and watch it again, and I would be happy to discuss that with you at some point because it was so bad.
Okay.
So bad.
I never saw any of them. I never thought about those. But there was only one that
actually aired in the United States, I'm pretty sure. But I remember Nathan Jones was on it.
Oh, yeah.
And then I started to be like terrified of his debut in WWE. People were like, what's the big deal? I was like, no, you don't understand how bad this guy is.
Yes.
You know, so that, I guess I might have seen Reno there, but anyways, that match was probably, I don't know, Chronic is awful.
Right.
And Big Vito was the guy who wore the dress in WWE, right?
Yeah, he was a little better in WCW, but
didn't he have I thought he was buddies, or not buddies, but like part tag team partners with
Johnny the Bull, yeah. They were the Mamalukes. I actually enjoyed them a little bit here and there in 2000 WCW. They were kind of a highlight. Most of the promos, the matches weren't good, but but they were, you know, they had some entertaining moments anyway.
You know, so getting to the next match after that, though, probably was pretty good. I've never seen it, but I would have no difficulty whatsoever believing that an ambulance match between Bam Bam Bigelow and Mike Awesome could potentially be great.
Yeah, but I don't know. Ambulance matches are kind of not mean, but yeah, I'm sure it was fine. I'm sure
up until the contrived part where they have to like get the guy into the ambulance, like probably everything up to that. Although the thing I'm reading right now gives it a half a star.
Okay,
so maybe not.
Yeah, we have General Rection, who is also Hugh Morris or Bill DeMott.
Yeah, right.
Bill DeMott. Against Shane Douglas, beating him by disqualification. And we have, this might be okay, well, it has the Harris Brothers in it, but it also has Jeff Jarrett, Rey Mysterio, Kidman, and Conan in a street fight. That could have been fun.
The Filthy Animals were also one of the few highlights of 2000 era.
Yeah, although the Rey Mysterio's outfits during that time, not so much.
Is that he was unmasked, Rey Mysterio?
Yeah, then. he was unmasked early '99. So yeah, he.
I don't know why Bischoff had such a hang up with unmasking his luchadors.
Like, yeah,
that's the point of the lucha. Like that's what makes them awesome. Like I don't.
Although honestly, for Hoovy, I think that actually helped Hoovy, but for Rey, it was definitely a poor decision.
No, definitely. And the funny thing is, like I was last week on Raw, I was kind of rolling my eyes. Because Kane came back with the mask. Kane has the mask on. A friend of mine was over here. And I was like, why is Kane wearing a mask? This is dumb. Like, we all know what he looks like. And he's like, yeah, but we all know what Rey Mysterio looks like. I'm like, yes and no. Like, we know because we were actually watching some of the WCW crap towards the end. But, like, WWE never took off Rey Mysterio's mask, which was the smartest thing they could have possibly done, was when they brought in Rey Mysterio, keep the mask. Like,
right.
That's such a horrible. He looks like he's 15 all the time.
Yes.
Like he's in his 30s now, and he still looks like he's 15 without that mask on. Like, keep the mask on, Rey Mysterio.
Yes.
That match could have been okay, I guess. This thing that I'm reading gave it 2.25 stars.
Okay. All right. Then we have Diamond Dallas Page and Kevin Nash against Chuck Palumbo and Sean Stasiak. That was not good. Yeah.
Why?
Well, Nash was the coach for the Natural Born Thrillers, and who were Sanders, Palumbo, Stasiak, Sean O'Hare, Mark Jindrak, and Reno. I think there were six of them.
Yeah. Felix Skipper, one of them, too?
No. Skipper was Team Canada. He debuted with Lance Storm. Yeah, so it was the six of them, and then they were managed by Nash for a while, and then at some point they turned on Nash. And so this was, you know, them getting revenge, or Nash picking DDP as his partner. They were the insiders, haha. And they, balls. Yeah, right. And so that was part of that deal.
Yeah.
And then the semi-main event is Goldberg taking on Lex Luger, which I'm sure was not good. And a no-holds-barred match.
I don't even want to try to envision what that might look like. And like 2000 Lex Luger wrestling Bill, because Bill Goldberg is very similar to Hulk Hogan in that way of like, he can have good matches if he's in there with someone who can have good matches with him.
Right.
Lex Luger is not that guy.
No. Yeah. So there were four matches on this show that were basically no rules. The hardcore match, the ambulance match, the bunkhouse street fight, and the no holds barred match. Although, given what we see in the main event, that wasn't, the WCW wasn't really.
I was going to ask if I missed something, and like if this was a no holds barred match, and I just
no, I don't think you missed anything. I think they just didn't care. So
yeah, it's for what we just talked about. This pay per view being this is the perfect main event for this show.
Yes,
because. Like late era WCW, the booking and it was just so, it's hard for me to even put into words. Like for any of the listeners who I don't think, we probably don't have a ton of young listeners listening to this show, but for anybody who wasn't watching this or didn't witness this firsthand, like the show was so bad and so illogical. Like, that's why I wanted to run down that title history. Like, nothing made sense at this point.
Right.
And like this match is just, it just follows suit. Like, nothing makes sense. Nothing is done for a reason. It's like the opposite of the match we just watched or just talked about, you know, the last time I was here with you. Like, it's the opposite of that Hogan's Piper match to me.
Sure.
Like,
yeah,
it's and who is the girl? I can't even pronounce her name.
She is the lovely Medasia, as Scott, I believe Scott Hudson put it.
Scott Hudson, yes.
Yes.
So who is she? Who, she was just his valet at that point?
Yeah, yeah. She just was his valet. I mean, she was his valet pretty much his entire time in WCW. I think I think World Wrestling All Stars, she was there too.
Is she a lady wrestler at all, or she's just
moves
that they got to walk around discussing?
Yeah, I mean, she gets on top and does a, you know, flying body press here. She looked okay.
Sure, she got on top a lot.
Oh,
do you see what I did there? But no, I mean, yeah, she does a crossbody, but like Jeremy Piven did a crossbody on Raw 2 years ago. So like, doesn't necessarily mean.
I mean, I don't recall her ever having matches, but I mean, they probably did one or two with her, maybe a mixed tag or maybe, you know, cat fight or whatever kind of thing. But,
right. So the first thing I noticed about this match, aside from the ridiculous commentary team that you that you mentioned,
right,
of Scott Hudson just being like, that was the thing. Like, this is the whole thing, and it goes to that whole Vince Russo school of thought. Even though he was gone by now, as we discussed, but like, it's that whole style that a lot of like Vince did a good job of. People use the term tweeners. I don't like that term because I don't think there is such a thing, really. Because every match has a baby face and a heel, you know what I mean? But Vince did a good job of, and still does to this day, a good job of taking guys who maybe walked the line a little bit. WCW tried to do that and they couldn't. And I just am constantly left wondering in this match, on the commentary team, like every way possible, like who is the good guy here? Like, I guess Scott Hudson is the heel commentator by default, but he isn't really. And like, Scott Steiner is the heel in this match by default kind of, but yeah. He isn't really. Like, Scott Steiner spends more time overcoming the odds in this match than Sid does.
Sure.
Like,
I think Mark Madden was technically in the heel role of commentating.
Yeah, but he says like four things.
Right. He doesn't say much. He's oddly quiet during this match for the most part. You're right. Yeah, it's really Tony and Hudson who are really giving a lot of the commentary. And what did Hudson say? I didn't jot it down, but he said something about it was with apologies to our military, or not trying to insult our military.
Yeah. It was the like, December 7th thing.
December 7th, which would have been just a few days before, is the day of infamy. But Sid Vicious's day of infamy was April 16th or whatever, the day that he was stripped of the title. So it was funny how they called, like, who would possibly have remembered that after the 50 title changes that happened afterward? Right. But you're playing off of, like, he was stripped of the title, so he's like the uncrowned champion kind of thing.
He does actually say Sid is the uncrowned champion.
Right,
he uses,
right.
Because I did note that. I did jot that down. He uses those exact words.
Right.
Sid is the uncrowned champion. But the thing is, like, it becomes more offensive when you call attention to it. If someone hit someone from behind and Gorilla Monsoon called it a Pearl Harbor job, you didn't really, like, you were like, okay, I get it. But, like, when Scott Hudson call, like, when he's basically like, I'm about to say something offensive, like, then it becomes more offensive.
Right, exactly.
Because you just noted that you understand that what you're saying is dumb and offensive, but you're going to say it anyways.
Right, exactly. So, I like that Tony, first of all, the over-the-top thing is Tony goes through, like, he mentions, like, you know, Flair and Race and Flair and Dusty and Flair and Sting and Hogan and Piper.
Vader
Vader. He mentions a handful of, like, the biggest Starrcade main events. Like, and this is in the class with that, of course, you know.
Of course it is, because this is the biggest night in our sport.
Right, Scott Steiner just I think there's a difference between Scott Steiner and Sid in just like the unintentional wrestling comedy of like, because I think that Scott Steiner at some point became in on the joke and is like being wacky and silly and making fun of himself, where Sid, it's just Sid can't help himself. Sid just, like, he just can't help being a big football, because that's what he is.
Yeah, Sid thinks that everything he does is awesome.
Right, where,
like, I remember reading that he apparently, like, allegedly, so you know with wrestling news, you never know.
Sure.
But allegedly, he didn't participate in the Four Horsemen DVD that WWE put out because, you know, he thought essentially that he was bigger than the Horsemen, and that he should have a DVD about him. And that, like he's so deluded. And allegedly Paul Roma said the same thing, if you can believe that. Like, Paul Roma thought he was the biggest thing that ever happened to the Four Horsemen. Like, you'd have to be so deluded to believe that in either case, but more so in Roma's case.
Actually, although I will, Roma actually is on the DVD a little bit. And yeah, he is. And they interview him, and he actually talks a little bit about it. Like, he says something similar to what you're saying, but he also – he kind of made an interesting point where he talks about, like – it's not so much that he believes that he was bigger. It was more that he was younger and that these guys were kind of wanting to, like, you know, be
steal
younger.
His thunder.
No, not quite like that. I mean, he phrased it in a way where it made a little bit more logical sense of it, and it was kind of like he wasn't really a party guy. He was just like, he believed in taking care of himself and sort of just not drinking and eating right and whatever, and these guys were kind of like, I forget like the exact things that he said, but like the points that he made are kind of like, oh, okay, I kind of see, like, it was silly to have you be in the Four Horsemen. Obviously it was ridiculous, it was dumb, and obviously these guys are better than you, but you know, he made a couple of valid points during that commentary, and I can't remember exactly how he phrased them now, but where I was like, okay, you have a side to it. It's not completely insane. I'm glad you were included in this DVD to express that. So,
yeah. Sid, on the other hand,
right,
is completely insane.
Yes.
And stabbed Arn Anderson.
Yes.
So,
right.
You know, I mean, the man is clearly like, he really thinks, you know, that he is the biggest draw in wrestling history. Like,
right.
You know, people didn't watch WrestleMania you know, WrestleMania 11 to see The Undertaker. They watched it to see him.
Right. 13, but yes.
Or 13, sorry. Yeah. You know, like, really? You really believe that? And, you know, so yeah, he's his unintentional wrestling. Because I do kind of agree with you. I still don't really like Scott Steiner. Like, his shtick has kind of worn thin. But I agree that at least it's self-aware.
Yes.
During this match, maybe not so much. Like, now...
No, yeah, now it is. I think during this time, no. And that brings to a point I want to talk about. Like, I feel like Scott Steiner, if he had turned and developed this character, say 1994 when he's in WWE, and let's say he gets the run that Diesel gets, only as a bad guy, mm-hmm. like he's basically doing like the Superstar Billy Graham thing, like, you know, right. almost 20 years later, or even if he's able to get it, like, you know, when he comes back into WCW, like in 96, like maybe even pre-NWO, like if he does it a couple years ago when he's still a pretty good wrestler, and because you know, he physically declined a lot at this point. I mean, Steiner is clearly a much better professional wrestler than Sid, even at this point. But I do just kind of wonder if he could have really exploded and really like had like a significant career as a singles main eventer, as opposed to being like, you know, just kind of like, okay, he's the guy who kind of kept the belt at the end and was sort of the guy they pushed at the end. Because even like his turn, I mean, he turned in early 98 and they didn't give him the title until a month before this. I mean, he wasn't, you know, it was like he wasn't really a main eventer in WCW until this point, until the end when it was too late.
Right. Well, it was too late for everybody.
Right, exactly. It was too late for everybody. Right. Like, I mean, it was too late for WCW. Right. And obviously when he got the chance in WWE, it didn't go well for a lot of reasons, you know, because he couldn't put the performances in was one of them, certainly.
Right. But, you know, he fooled a lot of people into thinking he was a star. Because, I mean, WWE built his return. Like, when WWE signed him, which... I mean, we can go round and round about how badly WWE, you know, screwed the pooch on the invasion angle, because they ended up paying how much more money for all these guys that were the stars, like, years after the invasion was over.
Sure.
2 years down the line, then all of a sudden they were like, oh, we're going to pay for Goldberg, and we're going to pay for Steiner, and we're going to pay for, you know, DDP. Well, DDP was part of the invasion, but we're going to pay for all these. We're going to pay for Hogan and Nash and Hall. Like,
right.
You know? And that was the same thing, but they built his return, like built it and built it and built it. And then they immediately put him into a main event feud with Triple H, which,
yeah,
my God, those are like, you know, and I know there are people who don't like Triple H and I disagree, but if you don't like Triple H, I think most of the reasons that people don't like Triple H have more to do with, they think he's kind of a politicker and maybe he's not as good as his spot on the card, but you can't deny that Triple H knows how to work a match. Mm-hmm. And even he couldn't have, you know, in my opinion, I think he's great. I think I love Triple H. I you know, F the haters on that one. I like Triple H. I still like Triple H. I still think he has great matches all the time. And even he could not have a watchable match with Scott Steiner.
Yeah.
Those matches are so terrible. Those two is Royal Rumble and No Way Out. I think he had,
yeah,
back-to-back matches with Steiner, and they're like borderline unwatchable.
Yeah,
like
the build-ups were good. The first one was really great. The build-up was great, and Steiner was hot, and he had the presence. I mean, he had a lot, but he couldn't deliver in the ring at that point.
Right. And I agree, but if you watch some of those matches, like if you watch his tag match at WrestleMania 9, or a lot of his earlier tag stuff, you know, from his first WCW run with his brother, and then his WWE run with his brother, and then his return, you know, all that, like, they're not I think Rick is probably the better wrestler in every really sense of the word, you know, but they're both very capable.
Yeah.
Very,
oh, yeah,
athletic. I mean, he's doing the Frankensteiner and all that stuff. Right. And like,
yeah, I mean, the Steiners were fantastic in the early 90s. I mean, you know, up through 95, 96, they were the best team, you know, in at least in, you know, US wrestling.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were up there, you know. I don't know.
I think
Legion of Doom, but they were. I mean, yeah,
they were better in the ring than Legion of Doom ever were. I mean, I would say.
But they didn't have the presence, I think, and that goes such a long with Legion of Doom. I mean, that goes all the way. Their presence.
During the time in which the two teams were popular, I would say they were about. I think Legion of Doom's best days were done by the time the Steiners were.
Yeah, that may be true.
I'm not a huge Road Warriors fan. I think I have a little bit of bias there, but
okay. Well, fair enough.
Anyway,
we agree that they were good, and yeah. Scott was good.
Yeah.
And something happened. I think it's called steroids.
It's possible. Yeah.
Like, but I mean, you see, when he gets huge,
yeah.
He gets a lot less athletic.
Right.
He stops doing the Frankenstein. He stops doing that stuff, yeah. You know, and he just becomes this big muscly dude who can barely, you know.
But I mean, I'll say the physique gave him more. I mean, he had more presence. He was intimidating. He was a scary looking guy. And he had that level of like, okay, this guy could snap at any time and pull somebody out of the audience and beat them up. Like, he had that like legitimate like fear, like that he could do anything. And yeah. And he, you know, was known for, you know, going off book a few times here and there. I mean, he had a infamous thing where he ran down Ric Flair. You know, he had another thing where he ran down DDP. You know, he had a couple of, you know, real life incidents, you know, and was, you know, and talk trash, you know, on TV when he wasn't supposed to, didn't really get in trouble for it.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, but he had that, you know, there was that, you know, loose cannon kind of thing, you know. I mean, and because
didn't he have a roid rage incident at some point?
I think I referred to it earlier. He had something involving like a construction worker, and I don't know if he choked him or whatever. It's sort of like, I think it was a physical altercation. He got in trouble for it, you know, kind of thing. But I still like, I feel like Scott Steiner could have been with a better timing. And he was obviously a big star, and he's lasted this long. He still wrestles, you know, and I find him entertaining to watch. But I think he could have really been one of the greats, at least for a while. Probably he would, you know, the body would have broken down at some point like it did later. But he could have had a run of being like really one of like the most important stars of the 90s. And it you know, obviously didn't happen that way. Yeah. I mean, he still was a big star, but you know, he wasn't, you know, he was down on the list, certainly, of guys who were, you know, important to WCW success.
Yeah, right. So, but I suppose we should probably talk about the actual match.
We probably should.
We should do. It's just not. It's not very good though. Like they right away. They like almost immediately. They go to a test of strength, which is funny for two reasons. One, a test of strength is generally considered to be a rest hold. It's not really something that you would just do at the beginning. I mean, there are occasions when you do it.
Hogan would do it.
I would say Hogan has done it.
The matches. Like
it's. The thing that I noticed really is that like Sid doesn't get hardly any shine in this match. Like yeah. Hardly any. Like generally, you know, when you talk about, you know, your sort of your match structure follows, you know, sort of the five act tragedy, that Shakespeare, that sort of same structure. Mm-hmm. You establish who's the good guy, who's the bad guy, which obviously in a case like this, we know who the good guy is and who the bad guy is, more or less.
Sure.
But then, you know, the babyface has his shine. And then there's the cutoff, the heat, and then the finish. And, like, the shine is just really, really brief. It's like, yeah. You know, there's the test of strength. Steiner just rocks Sid, like, down to his knees immediately in the test of strength, which, you know, he works his way out of it. There's a really, really awful clothesline over the top where Sid looks like he barely taps him. Mm-hmm. And then he only kind of half goes over, and, like, it's really ugly. They brawl outside a little bit. Medeja, is that how you pronounce her name?
Yes, yeah.
She hits Sid with it sounded like a kendo stick when it hit. That's the kind of sound it made.
Yeah.
Then Hudson keeps saying it's a steel pipe, and Shivani keeps saying it's a lead pipe.
Right.
They can't decide what kind of a pipe it is. It sounds to me like a plastic pipe. And then, like, right away, Sid, you know, like, that, or Steiner goes into his heat, like, right there. And, like, that's, Sid doesn't really get any great offense to speak of.
Yeah.
Really, at all from that point.
But, in fairness, yeah, until his comeback, right.
Right, until his very brief comeback.
Right. But, in fairness, do you really want Sid to, you know, to... display offense to be able to shine. I mean, I think really this match is better off for that lack of that, to be
this
honest.
This match is better off for only being like 11 minutes long.
Right, that's it's a very quick match. I will say that the different, like, you know, Scott Steiner, like, his offense, like, doesn't look fantastic here. I mean, he definitely, like I said, he kind of slipped. I mean, he didn't do anything horribly, but it wasn't like he didn't have the same crispness that he had earlier in his career. But I will say the difference between his punches and Sid's punches is stark.
It absolutely is. There's a gulf like the size of, you know, the Grand Canyon,
right,
between their punches. But I mean, even, you know, the last match that you and I talked about, we talked about how kind of, you know, those two guys, Piper and Hogan, really nothing, it wasn't nothing, not everything was super crisp, but it was passable. I don't even feel that way about this match. And these guys are, I think these guys were younger when they had this match than Hogan and Piper were when they had their match four years earlier.
Yeah.
You know, and like, it's just the clothesline. Steiner gives an awful clothesline, because I guess Sid gave an awful clothesline, so Steiner has to give one at some point in the match. And like, he actually says FU to, not, I mean, he says,
right,
you to a fan in the front, and it's very audible on the copy that I watched. What I watched must have been a pulled directly from the pay-per-view, because I imagine if there is a home video version, which I don't even know if there was, because they might have been bought by WWE before that would have come out on video anyways.
Either way, I feel like there was, but yeah.
Yeah, I feel like there was too, but I just thinking about that, I'm not sure. But if I'm sure that what I watched wasn't that, because if it was the home video version, I imagine they probably would have censored that. Maybe not.
Yeah,
he says F you to a fan. Uh-huh. And Shivani, ever the professional, says, Steiner there with some unkind words for one of the fans in the front row. Thank you, Tony.
Yes.
But there's the awful clothesline. Like, Steiner does do a good job of, first of all, again, his moves are not super crisp, but his moves are more passable than Sid's.
Sure.
Except for the recliner, which I'll get to in a minute.
Yeah.
I hate that move.
Recliner is a bad move. I agree with that. Yeah.
But he does a good job of getting his moves over, in the sense of something that bugs me when heels do, because it makes them look bad, ultimately, is heels will hit a babyface with a big move, and then they'll go to cover him right away. And the babyface has to kick out, right? Because it's not the finish, so they have to kick out. And that makes whatever move or hold that was look weak, because you hit him with this big move, you went to pin him right away, and he immediately kicked out. Steiner doesn't do that. Steiner does that weird, like, hopping belly-to-belly that he does.
Yeah.
You know, that, like, half 180 belly-to-belly. Like, yeah. He does that. And then, you know, I don't remember if that's the one where he does some push-ups. Or, like, he does some push-ups. He looks at the crowd. He goes to the people. And then he goes for the cover.
Right.
So Sid has had time to recover, you know, in the audience's mind. You know, he didn't capitalize on that maneuver.
Sure.
And he does that pretty much with every move, except the recliner, cause it's a submission hold. But pretty much every big impact, you know, move that he does – he goes, takes a break and goes to the people, or he goes to Medeja, or he goes to, you know, whatever. He does a taunt, or he does like a lackadaisical pin. There's one where he just kind of like lays on top of him, I think. Maybe that might have been Sid, actually.
Yeah, so that was Sid, yeah.
That was Sid. Okay, well, never mind then. But, you know, he does stuff to make it seem like, you know, to get his own moves over, in terms of that is a brutal move, but it's his arrogance that prevents him from getting the victory. And he actually does lift off of a pin at one point, doesn't he?
Yeah, early on.
Picks him up.
Yeah, yeah, they did some push-ups there as well. I think he did that a couple of times.
Yeah.
So. I will say one thing that looked pretty good was that right after the test of strength was when Sid actually suplexes out of the test of strength. He sort of, it's like a, basically like a, almost like a Northern Lights suplex, but he doesn't actually like hold on to it. But that actually was okay looking, for whatever reason. I've never seen Sid do that.
I would say it's probably because the only time you ever saw Sid do it, and you didn't think he could do it. So it automatically looks good, because you just were like, wow.
Yeah.
He just did that sort of Northern Lights, you know, test of strength suplex.
Yes. And then he gets a leg drop with that. That was the sloppy cover, the big boot, and then the not so good clothesline over the top, which led to what we talked about on the outside with Deja hitting with the steel pipe. And then Scott has a pretty good chair onslaught on down there.
Yes,
I thought
that's right. He does.
He hits it pretty good with the chair. So you know, there's a couple here things here that are okay. Like I will say that this
The chair shots look good for sure.
Yeah. I will say that this match at least like it had energy. You know, like it had movement. It wasn't like there's an Undertaker, the Undertaker Sid, the WrestleMania 13 match, the last Sid's last, you know, main event of a, you know, of a major, well, he main event of the pay-per-views, but of like, you know, the big show of the year in theory. Like the thing about that match is that match like feels like a 11 minute match that went like 22 minutes. Where this, at least, like, it's an 11-minute match. Like, and there's no, like, stopping. There's no, or I mean, there's, you know, they stop here or there. But there's no huge rest hold. There's no big moments of boredom. I mean, they basically hit every point they need to hit. And they do it at a decent, you know, a decent pace. So it's not, I mean, it's a very, very standard average. Well, it's below average.
It's below average.
Right. But if this were, like, a TV match, you know, on, you know, you know, this was just the main event of a TV show. It's whatever. It's not good, but it's not horrible either.
That is the problem, though. Like, it's not. It's the main event of, again, you know, as we talked about last time, this is the main event of the big pay-per-view, the granddaddy of them all, the WrestleMania. Right. Like, sure. This is that. Like, can you imagine if, you know, Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker came down and had an 11-minute match like this at the, you'd be like, what did I pay money to watch this for?
Sure.
You know, like it's just, you know, for that, it's terrible. It's terrible. There was never, I can't even think of a WrestleMania main event that would even touch this in no, like even the bad WrestleMania main events at least felt like WrestleMania made it. You know what I mean? Even the one, even that one Undertaker and Sid, like, yeah, it probably went on too long, but at least it had the sense of a WrestleMania main event.
Yeah, I'm going to go and disagree with, I think this is better than either Sid main event or WrestleMania. I mean, I'm not saying this is it at all.
Yeah. Well, the problem with WrestleMania 8 is kind of twofold, because WrestleMania 8, like thing one is that, it should have been Hogan and Flair. But thing two is that even when it turned out not to be Hogan and Flair, then Flair and Savage should have been the actual main event of that show, and it wasn't. Because that's way the better match.
Sure, you know, sure.
Obviously, and it's the title match. And it, like, but it should have been Flair and Hogan, you know. And that whole thing got totally derailed thanks to, you know, politicking and all that stuff. But, I mean, really, Sid should have been nowhere near that main event in any sense of the word. So who knows what the deal is with that. The 13 one, I don't really have a good defense for that. You could argue that Bret Hart versus Steve Austin should have been the main event just because it was great. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't excuse for that. I still think it's a better match than this one, though, because I think The Undertaker is better at doing what he does than either of these guys, you know, than Scott Steiner.
Yeah. But, although Undertaker and well, he was getting good by 97, but you know, Undertaker is in 97 certainly significantly worse than Undertaker today, but for the most part. But
I agree strongly.
Yes. but go ahead.
I was just gonna kind of try to guide things back a little bit and mention, kind of get back to, you know, Steiner's the one who's overcoming the odds this whole time, because shortly after this we get the recliner,
right?
Which again, I hate. So let's talk about that for a minute, because you said you hate it too,
right?
I hate that it's the most half-assed camel clutch that has ever been executed in professional wrestling history.
Yes.
If you watch, I just watched the because it was the you know, I just realized that I lied when we were talking in our last time we were together. I lied about having not watched a Hogan match in a long time, because I actually just watched Hogan versus Sheik.
Ah, yeah.
Because it's the, like, 28th anniversary of that happening this month.
Yeah, January 23rd, I believe.
1984, the day Hulkamania was born, brother.
Yep.
You know, but I watched that match, and admittedly, it's a very short match. But the camel clutch in that, like, the way Hogan gets out of it is to get to his knees. And then he's able to do the push up and stand up and get, and Steiner puts people in it when they're on their knees.
Right. Yeah. Like,
what? That it's so, it doesn't even look like it hurts. Like, I just don't like it. I don't think someone like Scott. The thing is, I don't think Scott Steiner should be winning matches with a submission hold. You know, in the same way that I honestly don't think the Undertaker should win in a with a submission hold, like the, you know, the Devil's Gate thing.
Yeah.
Don't like it.
I think
a guy like Scott Steiner should throw you around and do, you know, the Steiner screwdriver or the, you know what I mean? Something like that. That is when the match is over, when he has pummeled you because he is huge. You know, that's just my opinion, I guess. But if he's going to win with a submission hold, this is a really stupid one. Like, it just looks bad. It looks stupid. It doesn't look like it hurts at all, because it doesn't. Like, I just, oh, man, it looks ugly. And especially in someone as tall as Sid, it's like, why aren't you standing up? Like, you're on your knees. You're a strong dude who's, like, 5 inches taller than this guy. Why don't you just stand up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. I think I don't mind Scott Steiner having submission. I don't mind Undertaker having submissions, because I like having guys who have different ways of beating you. I kind of like having more than one finishing hold for different guys. So I get what you're saying. But I always thought that he should have done a dragon sleeper. Oh, that would have been a good one. Because that would have taken like
he has giant arms.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that would have totally made sense. But I don't know. I'm assuming just because of Scott Steiner had a bad back and lack of flexibility was the reason he didn't do it. But yeah, that was pretty dumb. I mean, that was kind of ridiculous. They didn't, and it didn't look good. You're right. I mean, the guy, it seemed like he could have just slipped his hands out really easily. Yeah, and right. I mean, if it had been more like a choke, like if he'd been able to like do like Taz Mission or something like that, you know, like that would have kind of made more sense. Something along those lines would have really been a much better move for him to do. So I never, this recliner always, that one bothered me too. That one was, I agree with that. That's a I pretty much love Scott Steiner otherwise, but that is a, you know, that is a big flaw. I will acknowledge that.
Well, this is where we go full tilt into, you know, again, Scott Steiner is battling the odds. So,
okay.
You know, Sid reaches out, grabs the rope.
Yes.
Fine. Now, Medeja gets involved. And this little, with those big fake cans on her, she probably weighs, you know, maybe 140 pounds, if I'm assuming that those gigantic, freakish things that are bolted onto her chest weigh like 10 pounds each.
Right.
But she's a little, I mean, she is a svelte female. Yes. She's not, she can't, I mean, honestly, she can't weigh more. She's got to tip the scale at 120 or 130.
Sure.
She does a crossbody. Steiner ducks it. And she like kills Scott Steiner. Right. Not only does she hit him, he falls down. He takes a full bump from
this
little 130-pound girl and then lays there selling it like grim death in it.
Yes.
Like, what? And, like, so if you're going to put that over like that, like, again, like, he's bad. And then when Jarrett comes down later, like, it just keeps going and going. Like, Steiner's the one who's getting screwed, not Sid.
Yeah.
In a way, it's all backfiring stuff of him cheating, but, like, it's not the same as heel takes off the turnbuckle pad, then heel hits the exposed turnbuckle.
Right.
It's like people are coming down to help him, and they're not helping him.
Right. They keep doing the opposite, screwing it up. That. Yeah.
And it happens multiple times.
Yeah. You know? A couple of things that we should mention involving that are he does the Steiner recliner. Sid reaches the ropes, as you mentioned. Then he forearms him a few times, hits a suplex, and then locks it in again, the recliner in again, which I liked. I liked when Sid reaches the rope, just Steiner nonchalantly just forearms him rather than allowing for the rope break, which is fun. At this point, Tony is calling this like it's the most dramatic thing ever. Like, these guys have been battling for 40 minutes. And Sid is like near death, but he's, you know, just, you know, he's lifting his arm, you know, he's showing that fight, like he's calling it like it's Flair Steamboat. And like, I feel like Tony, throughout this entire match, like he's just really impressed with the fight these guys have. And I know that's part of his job, but the level in which he does it is so dramatic. Like, I feel like this has to be some sort of rib. Like, these guys are like trying, and Hudson and to a lesser extent Madden are doing it too. Like, this is just like, wow. And maybe I just need to compare commentary of this time with what, like, you know, they're doing here. Maybe that was just something they were doing at this point. Maybe they were instructed or whatever to be.
Yeah, I feel like at this point, that's what Shivani was like all the time.
Right. But he is not doing it in a way like it. He's doing it in like a way that like it almost seems more genuine than it usually did. Like he's just so over the top. It's weird. Like I don't know if I can put into words, but it's just like, you know, oh my God, you know, it's like, you know, completely out of tone with the match. Because obviously this is about his lack, you know, it's energetic, like I said, but it's, the action is not real. I mean, it's very paint by numbers, you know, kind of stuff. It's very, and it's not necessarily well executed, and there, you're right, there are some psychology issues here, but yeah, I mean, it really is just very basic. I mean, it's, you know, and then, yeah, there's, you know, you talked about Medeja going to the top, hitting Steiner with the body press. Then Sid hits a choke slam and Steiner kicks out. And my favorite line.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Okay. I'll let you have it. I'll maybe let you have ever. It. This is my favorite too.
Okay. Scott Hudson, we've seen the choke slam and the recliner. What's left in their arsenal?
And my comment after that was, not much.
Right.
But in honesty, what was in their arsenal before that? Also not much.
Right. So. Exactly. So we have Sid locking in the Cobra Clutch. Steiner.
Which, where did that come? Was that a thing he was doing at this time?
He did that occasionally, but Goldberg did it to him in the weirdly awesome match he had with Goldberg at Halloween Havoc 99, the one where he bleeds a whole bunch.
Gotcha.
Okay. But I think, yeah, he did. I think he did the Cobra Clutch Slam once in a while too. Like, that was something he sort of added at some point in 2000. So yeah, Steiner is during the Cobra Clutch, like, Steiner sort of reaches out, either like smacks or sort of like eye pokes. The ref, I believe, is Slick Johnson. He's bald. I'm pretty sure it's Slick Johnson. Sid does the Cobra Clutch Slam. Medeja sort of distracts Sid at some point. Goes in again. A lot of this has happened, not this, but a lot of the other stuff, like the thing with Medeja getting in the ring, all this is in front of the ref. The ref doesn't really seems pretty nonplussed by it. Like, I don't even recall him, like, trying to get Medeja not to be involved. Like, I don't even recall him, like, warning. At this point, the ref's just giving up. Just like, okay, whatever.
Yeah. But
that's about all we're going to do.
Yeah. Like, it's like, you know, is this it's like the ref just gives up. He's just like, nah, whatever.
Yeah. I remember at some point in 2000, I think it was around the beginning of the Russo-Bischoff stuff, like, they actually announced, like, we're just going to relax the rules. Like, we're not going to, like, the referees aren't going to enforce everything. We're just going to, like, open it up. That was, I guess, like, the way to justify, like, the, you know, we'll let anything happen at any point. We're not going to try to explain it type of thing. That was kind of, like, their way of explaining it without really explaining it. So I guess this is part of that. I don't know. Anyway, Steiner nails Sid repeatedly with a pipe, but Sid's able to kick out on the pin. Cause Charles Robinson comes out at some point. And Jeff Jarrett clad in a Slapnuts t-shirt, which,
right. The classic listen up Slapnuts. Yeah. Okay. So wait, I think have we missed the part where Charles Robinson is already in? Or did we miss that?
Because
Charles Robinson runs in.
Right. No, but he somebody does the count. So I think it must
be. Yes. No, it is. This is the part where it really was like, is this, are there rules or not? Because right. He's holding the pipe that he just hit Sid with.
Right.
When Charles Robinson runs in. And then Jarrett hits him with the guitar.
Right. Well, he runs out with the guitar. Steiner's holding Sid in front of him, and then Jarrett swings it, and he hits
Ian Steiner.
Ian Steiner instead. Yeah, I have
which again goes back to that whole like Steiner's the one overcoming all the odds in this match. Everything goes against Steiner, and he still manages to get the victory.
But at a moment that I really enjoy is Sid goes for the cover. 1-2 Jarrett pulls Charles Robinson out, but Robinson lands on his feet. Jarrett tries to clothesline him, but Charles Robinson ducks
and
slides back in, gets the count. Jarrett can't get in time to do it to interfere again, but it only gets two. Now that's a great moment.
It's a great moment, but that again left me like,
right?
Are there not rules in this
right match? Now I guess Charles Robinson sort of sends Jarrett back. I know he's pointing at him and kind of like, because Jarrett doesn't really get involved again, so I guess that's it. Sid tries a powerbomb, but Steiner gets a low blow. The second low blow lands right in you, Robinson. It seems like he could have seen the first one. He definitely saw the second one.
Definitely saw the second one.
No one apparently really cares. We have a T-bone suplex followed by the Steiner recliner. Medacia sort of gets up on the apron. You think she's going to do something, but she's ended up just kind of cheering him on. And then Sid passes out. Pretty much like he goes from like, I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay, and then passes out like right away. There's no like attempt to make it like slowly passing out. Like he pretty much passes out.
Yeah.
Right at that moment.
And that was the thing that like the finish comes out of nowhere.
Pretty much.
Like, all of a sudden, I was just like, it's over.
Yeah.
Like, and he doesn't, like, which is also funny because, again, the last match that we talked about on this podcast.
Right.
The announcers are yelling, like, check the arm, check the arm. Like, Heenan is like, check the arm, check the arm.
Right.
When, you know, Piper's got Hogan in the sleeper.
Right.
And, like, in this match, like, it's just, like, done. Like, it's just over.
Yeah.
There's no, like, 1-2-3 with the arm or anything. It's just, like, he's in the thing. It's the deadliest Steiner recliner ever. He's like dead to the world or whatever. And the ref is just like, oh, match is over.
Yeah. And
I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah. And I mean, in fairness, Sid doesn't really do anything to sort of like indicate a struggle. So it's like, you would think the commentators would sort of be reading like the cues of the wrestler to be able to comment. So like if Sid had actually been showing some sort of indication of a physical struggle or of like, you know, that he was being hurt by the move significantly rather than just like, okay, I'm in it and now I'm passing out, then the commentators might have had some time to, you know, like check him. Is he going to pass out? Is he okay? You know, that kind of thing. But yeah, so I think it was a failure on both levels there.
Yeah. But yes.
I do love Tony Schiavone's at the end. One of the most physical enduring tests of strength and endurance and power that he's ever seen.
Like,
yeah.
Seriously? Like I did. That's the kind of thing that I hate Tony Schiavone for. Like, I'm like, nobody believes that this is that.
But he's like, he wants you to believe it so badly here. He, you know, where before he just is sort of like, you know, he's just kind of saying it. He's just kind of, you know, he's just kind of going through the motions here. Man, he it feels like he means it. It's ridiculous because I just saw the match. But God, Tony really wants me to believe this.
He really would like me to believe that this is the most grueling test of strength that any two athletes have ever been.
Right. I mean, I've seen Sting Vader, but gosh, I mean, maybe this is, or I've seen Flair Vader, but gosh, maybe this is better than that. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I just like.
Yeah.
It's like, really? Is that
right?
Like, who do you expect to believe that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Jim Ross would never make a call like that unless he really believed it.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Exactly. I mean, there, you know, obviously your announcers are trying to make everything seem as good as possible. But yeah, there's a certain time in which you give, like, this is the greatest thing ever call. And you do that in matches that are tremendously good.
Where it seems like it might actually be that.
Right.
Like, there's.
Right, you know, where there's a moment where there's actual, like, genuine emotion. You can't, I mean, obviously you're trying to bury the match either, you know, but there's ways of phrasing things where you can communicate, you know, you can try to, you know, do your job and make it seem as good as possible without going so over the top that you lose your credibility, which is things that announcers do all the time, and you know, WCW guys were guilty of that, and you know, other, I mean, Michael Cole's guilty, you know, all sorts of people are guilty of that, even in WWE. I think Jim Ross is one of the few who's able to, you know, avoid that.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part. I mean, I think Jim Ross, you know, would admit that he said a silly thing, you know, here and there, but
well, nobody's going to say that the silliest man, I don't want to talk about this, but I have to bring it up since you said Jim Ross said a silly thing.
Okay.
The dumpster incident is like, that's Jim Ross's, but Jim Ross is only guilt. The silliness there is only, he's just trying to make it, you know, I guess he's doing the same thing Shivani is doing, because he's trying to make an otherwise ridiculous moment seem really intense.
The dumpster incident, are you talking about when
Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie, aka Terry Funk, were in a dumpster,
right,
and the New Age Outlaws pushed it off the stage?
Yeah,
bunch of like styrofoam packing peanuts flew out of it.
Right.
And they
tried
to sell it like they killed Mick Foley by putting him in a dumpster filled with packing material.
The packing peanuts thing made it that hurt it, but like I actually thought that was done really well, like when they, because they had all like they had almost all of the locker room come out and act concerned, and like even the Outlaws were a little bit like the way they presented that was actually, if it hadn't been for the packing peanuts thing, I thought that was actually like spot on, and the fact that at the end of the show Foley and Cactus or Chainsaw Charlie, Terry Funk, obviously come out and then attack, you know, and then, you know, like come out at the end and like, oh, they're okay, kind of thing. Yeah. You know, that was pretty silly, but
killed too.
Yeah.
I just thought it was so like, even, and I was like 14 when that happened or 15 when that happened. And like, they fell like 10 feet. I don't know. I just thought it was, I thought it was more goofy because the whole roster came out and everyone was like, what did you do? Like, really?
I guess part of it was because I was still fairly new to watching again, and I'd never quite seen anything like that. So it stood out to me in the way that it was, you know, you're making good points. I get why you would have felt that way, but to me that actually worked really well because of some of those things, you know. I guess it wasn't that far, but it was off of the stage. You didn't see guys. I mean, you've seen plenty of guys get thrown off a stage, you know, here, you know, since then, but at the time that was still kind of a novel thing. So
yeah, I guess that's probably not as bad then as Shivani trying to sell these kinds of things.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you had the, you know, you obviously had, you know, your opinion of your feelings of it are completely, I completely understand them. That completely makes sense. For me, I had a different way, but I've definitely, you know, Jim Ross at WrestleMania will talk, pretty much whoever is in the main event of WrestleMania, and I learned this from watching all the WrestleMania matches for my podcast, is like, you know, whoever the greatest wrestler it has been for forever, and it's a lot of times Triple H, but sometimes the other guys, they're in that match right there. Like, you know, he uses some of those stock lines for different guys in different situations. And it makes sense because that's what his job, he's the hype man, he's all that. It's not like it undermines his credibility. It's just funny watching those one after another, not the way they're really meant to be watched, obviously. You definitely can see him doing that.
Yeah, that's okay. That's fair enough.
Yeah. So any other thoughts on the match?
It's sad to me that this is how Starrcade went out.
Yeah.
Like, this is, again, I mean, even the worst WrestleManias, and there are some stinkers of WrestleManias. You watch some of those, I would say, like, between WrestleMania 9, like, 10 has some very bright spots because Bret Hart wrestles twice. Mm-hmm. But aside from those matches, really, and the ladder match, like, WrestleMania 10, not so great. WrestleMania 11, not so great. 12, again, bright spot of the Iron Man match, but really besides that, like, some of those WrestleManias, not very good. And even some of the more recent ones also fall into that not very good, because they have a lot of rushed matches. Like, they try to put too many matches and not enough time, and there's stupid crap like the Miller Lite Catfight Girls. But even the worst WrestleManias, usually are able to redeem themselves by the main event, if nothing else. You know, even Bam Bam Bigelow and Lawrence Taylor, like, for what that is, which is essentially like, hey, look at this celebrity in a wrestling ring, it's pretty good. Like, I can't think of another match in that vein that's as good as that one. And it was preceded by Shawn Michaels versus Diesel, which was pretty good in its own right. But, like, this main event, this whole card, from the looks of what we just ran down at the beginning of this podcast, like, this is that is a bummer of a note for a show that started, like, the first, what, eight? Well, maybe not the Battle Bowls, but the first 7 years, I guess I would say, or 6 years of Starrcade, at least, were just these really ridiculously awesome, you know, stacked. I mean, you've got the dog collar match in the first Starrcade. You've got Flair just, like, tearing the house down, like, in almost every one of those. Even as goofy as it was, like, the scaffold match with the Road Warriors was cool. You know, you've got, like, my favorite match is a Starrcade, you know, is a Starrcade match, Magnum TA versus Tully Blanchard. You know, Dusty and Flair in the cage, like, all these matches, like, that have set this, like, legendary precedent. And, it just ends. The legacy of Starrcade ends with, like, a wet fart. Like, that's the best way that I can put it. Like, that's what this is. That's what this match and this show were. They were just... like that. That's, and it bums me out, man. And like I said before, you know, last time we were together, I don't understand why WWE doesn't change the name of their December pay-per-view to Starrcade and capitalize on that.
Yeah, well, maybe after this event they just felt like they couldn't.
Right, there's the name was more damaging than it was helpful after this particular event.
Right,
I think enough time has passed now, though, that people would, you know, people would associate it with the good ones more so than the bad ones. Sure. You know, because it's, you know, prior to the very last couple, you know, I guess, what was the main event of 99?
Goldberg and Bret.
Okay, so that is, so 98, bad. Not that the match was bad, but the finish was just so bad.
Right.
So bad. And, you know, 2000 were bad, but other than that, even the other, you know, I think at this point, you know, enough people would associate the good parts of Starrcade. Even 90, I'm jealous that I didn't get to come and talk about Starrcade 97, because even though the finish of that match, I already suggested my moratorium on Montreal Screwjob stuff, mm-hmm. which that was really bad because it was right in the wake of it, but it didn't make any sense and it was really stupid, you know, and nobody knew what was going on, because I remember watching that pay-per-view as it happened and I had no idea what was going, what's happening? Nick Patrick with the fast count and, like, it's just stupid. The match, though, and the build to it was really great. You know, the rest of that card is pretty good. And, like, all these other Starrcades, like, I think if WWE brought it back now, people would associate it with the good things about Starrcade and with it being a marquee pay-per-view for WCW. So I think the name, and again, I'm a huge wrestling nerd, so maybe I'm not the right person to ask, but I think the name still has weight, and I would like to see WWE bring it back.
When Impact, TNA had that special, like the first Hogan Bischoff Impact, when they had like Hall and Nash, and, you know, it was kind of like the WCW reunion. I was thinking in the back of my head, you know, it would have been really cool at some point if WWE, you know, like they have, of course, had the ECW One Night Stand shows. If they had had like a WCW Starrcade, like a WCW nostalgia show, kind of the same vein.
Yeah.
Like, I think that would have been really cool. And call it Starrcade. I think that would have been a fun thing that they could have done. I think they still could. I mean, basically most of those guys are kind of old or really just not really associated with WCW anymore, that it wouldn't, or are kind of TNA, obviously, but. But yeah, that would have been cool. You could still use the name, even if I probably would have been good to do it when the DVD came out. That probably would have been a good thing to have done. But yeah, I mean, I kind of doubt they would, and they kind of like to do their own thing or whatever. But
I've heard that the brand extension, you know, allegedly it wasn't supposed to be Raw and SmackDown. It was supposed to be, you know, WWE and WCW, but that didn't play out. I mean, again, allegedly this is based on what I read in the I forgot what the name of the book is. The WCW book.
Death of WCW,
right?
Right, yeah, Brian Alvarez, yeah.
Which I still think is a fantastic book. I don't have a ton of love for Brian Alvarez, but I think that's a great book. And, you know, as allegedly what he reports is that the plan was to make one of the shows a WCW show, but apparently USA was kind of like, yeah, but you just bought them and their ratings were awful, so we don't feel there's any, like, any weight of that those names is negative weight. And we don't want them on our networks, essentially, because we think the association with those names and that programming is bad.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, because I think that's a lot more engaging and draws the line a lot bolder than Raw and SmackDown. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's, I mean, that is what it is. But, yeah, I mean, I feel like they maybe might have if they'd gone that way, but I do wish they would capitalize on more of that, you know, more of some of that WCW stuff. And again, I mean, I just basically what I'm driving at though is that I'm really sad that this is how Starcade went out.
Yes, yes. Well, we'll always have memories, you know.
That's right.
We'll always, and obviously, as Tony Schiavone said, that, you know, there's so many memories were created that night, you know, memories to last a lifetime. So,
that's
and Tony wouldn't lie to me.
No, Tony Schiavone would never lie to you.
But I mean, honestly, like, if you want to come up with a match that sort of defines what WCW became at this point.
This is a good one.
this is kind of not a bad, like, I feel like for the most part, except maybe the Battle Bowl years, like the main event of Starrcade, even more so than the main events of WrestleMania, really kind of define where WCW was at the point in which they were, you know, were there. So I so in that sense it almost feels fitting, but it's of course sad that WCW was mismanaged to the point where that happened. Incredibly sad, you know, because wrestling has been worse for WCW being gone, or well, worse for it having a horrible decline and then being gone for sure.
I would say yes. I would say wrestling is significantly worse for it having a horrible decline.
Yes.
And then, you know, I mean,
because the consequence of that being gone because of not having, you know, really, you know, I mean, yeah, TNA's around and they have provided a certain level of competition at certain points. But yeah, I mean, I think if WCW had been able to stick out and stay on TBS at least, and, you know, which may not have happened anyway, but I still think a WCW that is not completely failing and hemorrhaging money and a huge embarrassment for a lot of reasons would have had a chance to stay on those stations, even if the president of the stations didn't care much for wrestling on their butt. Yeah, or they would have found it somewhere anyway, even if it wasn't there. But
wrestling was still the top rated regular show on TNT.
Right.
When they sold to Vince.
Right.
Like, I can't even wrap my brain around this is just going to turn into a really depressing conversation about how horribly, horribly mismanaged WCW was.
Right.
And how, like, yeah, it was like the new head of those networks hated wrestling so much and thought it was lowbrow or whatever he thought. Who knows what he thought. But that he would take the top rated, you know, regular show, obviously things like the World Series and basket, you know, NBA finals and stuff notwithstanding, but the top rated regular weekly show on his network and shit can it because he just didn't that's just like the last laugh of the whole ridiculous thing. But yeah, that wasn't very long after this, obviously. I'm sure, I mean, I remember vividly watching Raw that night, the night of the, you know, which was 3 months after this, I think.
March of that year.
You know, the you know, the Panama City Nitro and both shows going on simultaneously. And,
sure.
Know, and that was, you know, and it's a bummer that, again, that the product had declined to such a terrible point. And the worst thing about that is that it would have gotten better. Like, it was pretty much at the point where it practically had nowhere to go but up.
Yeah, it was actually starting to get better at this point, or a little bit after this point. They once Russo left, the storytelling got a little bit better, or at least a little bit cleaner and a little bit like...
that always happens when Russo leaves.
Right, exactly. I mean, the shows were, and they were starting to bring in a little bit of new talent and some indie guys. I mean, AJ Styles had an early appearance there. Some of the cruiserweight guys, you know, they started bringing some better cruiserweight guys again. I mean, you know, they had a long way to go. It would have been rough sailing because they had dug themselves into a pretty big hole. But like I said, even though they still had the best audience on that station. They still had, you know, 25 years of, you know, tradition. Kind of a brand, yeah, tradition and brand loyalty and everything. And that means a lot. I mean, that, you know, so they could have, you know, maybe they would have had to go back to Saturday Night or something, or, you know, who knows what they would have had to do, but it could have worked. You know, it could have been salvaged. Even as bad as it had gotten, you know, somebody could have turned it around, or at least gone it to a level in which it could have existed and, you know, and been fine and not harmed anyone and, you know, just been a show people liked or whatever. But, you know, I mean, the fact that somebody didn't like wrestling was obviously a significant thing, but there were lawsuits. It was losing a lot of money. I mean, there was a lot of other things going on as well that, you know, that made it easy to cancel.
Well,
it.
That's true, but I mean, Eric Bischoff got investors together and wanted to buy it, and
right.
You know, that would, I mean, he essentially would have absorbed the debt. When you buy a company like that, you absorb right. whatever their debt is. He would have taken that financial responsibility off of TNT. All they had to do was say, okay, you can still have the time slot. And they even were like, nope, sorry.
Yeah. Well, but you kind of get why they wouldn't have won that, and why that decision was easier because of that, you know, but,
yeah,
it's a sad situation. It's, I can see, like, I don't know. You can see if circumstances had been different, it may, you know, like obviously the Bischoff group might have gotten it or whatever. There's a Jerry Jarrett group I know that was trying to get it at some point too. So,
right.
You know, who knows? And obviously it didn't happen that way. It happened in a sad way, but
unfortunately. So this was, this isn't even the death rattle of Starrcade. This was the death of Starrcade, although yes. Perhaps the death rattle of the WCW.
Right.
There's the writing was starting to be on the wall here. Nobody I knew, even the most diehard of wrestling fans, nobody I knew was watching WCW.
Yeah.
I wasn't watching it at this point regularly. I mean, once in a great while just to see what they were doing, but sure. I was definitely watching more ECW than I was WCW at this point.
Yeah.
And way more, you know, WWE, obviously. Yeah.
And ECW obviously wasn't long for this world either at this point.
Right. But, you know, yeah. I mean, I was watching I watched their goofy Friday night show pretty occasionally, I guess. And I watched all their pay-per-views.
Mm-hmm.
Which I definitely was not ordering WCW pay-per-views.
No.
For sure at this point. You know, because that's the thing. ECW went out, but they went out in a way, you know, I have the DVD of Guilty as Charged, the 2001, their very last pay-per-view, the January 2001 pay-per-view. And
right.
It has some really good stuff on. Like, it's a far cry from this show, you know. They went out in a situation where they were the little guy and they were having problems and their time slot kind of got stolen out from under them by Vince, you know, because TNT or TNN, I should say, was, you know, actively courting WWE while ECW was on the channel.
Right.
But, you know, ECW couldn't break their side of the contract, and, you know, that stuff. But that last pay-per-view still holds up. And this isn't, obviously, this was not WCW's last pay-per-view. But the one that was is even worse. So I guess, like, it just, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just sad that a company with such history, such, you know, all of that, you know, such a rich history. This event had such a rich history and all of it just, it was in the gutter when it went out, and that's a bummer.
So. Indeed. All right. Well, why don't you plug whatever you would like to plug for listeners who didn't hear the last show.
Time.
Yes, okay. And important to do that.
So if you would like to tune into my regular insanity, you can follow me on Twitter. That's twitter.com/shake_well. I talk a lot about wrestling and video games. So that's, if that's a thing that you're interested in, you should follow me there. I co-founded and help run a website called onthestick.com, which is a video game site. We make bi-weekly podcasts, and I make some video content for that site as well. Obviously, if you're listening to this, you're a fan of Fair to Flare. I've contributed there as well. And probably by the time this goes up, I'm hoping I will have started my monthly column at fairtoflare.com about wrestling video games. So that's going to be a thing as well. So I think that's all the shameless plugs I have right now.
Cool. Well, definitely very excited about that. And thanks again for being on the show. Always a good discussion with us.
Yeah, absolutely. I was glad to be a part of it. Big fan of the show. I've been listening to the series as well up to this point, and I'm glad that you had me back. So.
All right. And thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll be back again soon.